So you can see here that nirvana, and it's important for us to understand nirvana as a negative idea. In understanding it as a negative idea, we understand it in its Indian way, as a concept that responds to the particular challenges and needs of Indian civilization. But it's not a negative concept, as it were, in its totality. It is negative in form, you might say, but positive in content. The experience that you have of nirvana is an experience of freedom, of unattached, of detachment, of wisdom, and the ability to respond with a certain clarity of mind to all the difficulties that life presents you. And in that sense, I think you can really imagine that it is the Buddhist image of the perfection of a human person, because that really is what the Buddha is for Buddhists. He is a perfect human being. That's the third noble truth, the truth of cessation, the truth of nirvana. There also is a fourth noble truth, the path to nirvana, that we should discuss. Obviously, it's important for us to know something about the discipline that leads people to nirvana, both for lay people and also for the monks and nuns who are part of the Buddhist monastic community. Now, the path to nirvana is often divided into eight categories, like the eight spokes of the wheel of the Buddha's teaching, the Noble Eightfold Path, beginning with a concept of right understanding and then moving on through right thought, right speech, right action, and so on, right livelihood. You can imagine what some of these are. I think that the logic of the path becomes a little bit more clear if we take these eight categories and we reduce them or group them together into three. This is often done in traditional Buddhist teaching: sila, or moral conduct; samadhi, mental concentration; and punya, or wisdom. So if you ask, especially as we confront this tradition for the first time, what does a Buddhist have to do to achieve nirvana? Okay, professor, you've been telling me about nirvana. I'm convinced that it might be something worth trying. What would I have to do if I wanted to seek that great ideal? Well, first of all, you should abide by certain basic rules of moral conduct. You know why? Because if you perform actions that are going to be dangerous and destructive for other people or for yourself, you may very well end up coming back like one of those tigers or worms or boars or ants or mosquitoes that we talked about when we were reading the Upanishads. And it's not all that easy, if you're a mosquito, to try to achieve nirvana. So it would be a good idea for you at least to start by engaging in the proper modes of conduct that will make it possible for you to come back in a way that would be conducive to nirvana. What are those? No killing, no stealing, no lying, no abuse of sex, and no drinking intoxicants. The five basic moral precepts of the traditional practice of Buddhism. These apply to lay people as well as to monks, something that anyone can do. Monks observe five more basic precepts and a number of other regulations that also have to do specifically with the monastic life. These include the restriction that they cannot eat after 12 noon, so all monks beg their food in the morning and have, let's say, a sufficient meal before noon. I'm tempted to say that they have a big meal, but I don't know the monks in the Theravada tradition well enough to say that they really sit down with a full begging bowl and absolutely fill their stomachs. But they have to provide for themselves a sufficient meal by noontime and then not eat for the rest of the day. None of this food, of course, can be carried over to the next day, so they have to beg each day the food for that day.